Okay, so we're up to the end of Lamed Ches Amid Beis, the bottom line. Just to review what the Gemara had said, the Gemara was describing whether we appoint a relative to take over the field of someone who's a hostage to make sure that the field is managed properly. And there's svaras back and forth, because on the one hand, he might prefer that, because that way it'll be managed well. On the other hand, he might be bothered by someone else touching his stuff. So the Gemara felt there was a machleik, it was a machleik as Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara said it's really a machleik as Tanaim. Now, this braisa that the Gemara quoted gave three categories. It called them Shavuyim, Netushim, and Retushim. Shavuyim would be the first one, which is where someone's taken captive, or by the way, not just taken captive, or goes overseas and then is can't find them. The first example of Shavuyim is where you heard that they died. So the Gemara had said, if you heard that they died, l'kuli alma, you appoint someone. That's the first category. The second category is hostage or lost overseas. You didn't hear that they died. That's called netushim. And the last category, so that is machlekes, whether you appoint a trustee. And the last category is retushim. Retushim is where they're in the city, you just can't find them. They never left. They just disappeared from the city. That l'kuli alma, you do not. So Shavuyim l'kuliyama you do, retushim l'kuliyama you don't, nitushim is machlekes. So the Gemara just has an aside. Ma'ishin ahanach dekarle nitushim, ma'ishin ahanach dekarle retushim. Why are they called nitushim or retushim? What's the difference in the lingo? One is where they went overseas, and one is where they just disappeared within town. Why is one called nitushim and one called retushim? So the Gemara says, nitushim debal karchan. Nitushim implies abandonment against your will. Netushim implies that you're gone. It's the beginning of Lamed Tes Amid Aleph. Lamed Tes, the first line. Netushim implies that the person is gone, but the person is gone not due to their will, sort of against their will. Dechsiv, as the Pasuk says, Vashvi is Tishmetena Unatashta. The Pasuk describes Shemitah that it releases all debt. Now, that's Unatashta. It happens automatically. So that implies someone who is gone, who's released, meaning released from where they are, meaning captive, or against their will. Retushim, meaning afkod malka, it's suspended by the king, meaning Hashem does it himself. Retushim, though, that's someone who's in the town. He's not, he chose to leave. He chose to escape. That's the medaitan. That implies abandoned it willingly. Dechsiv, eim halbanim retusha. The pasuk says the mother and the children have abandoned. They did it willingly. So that explains the lingo. Okay, fine. Now, Tana, the Braisa says like this, Vikulam, all of these people that manage, I sort of referenced this quickly, it's a little bit difficult in the Rishayim to understand the exact halacha, but the basic premise is that when we appoint a relative to manage this hostage's field, they're not doing it to be a Baal Chesed. They're getting a cut. They get a cut as a sharecropper. Vikulam, Shamin Lim Ka'aris. All of these people that manage the field get a sharecropper's value. So let's say the sharecropper in that town gets 25%. They get a 25% cut of the crops. Now, let's just run through the situation right here. Okay? Why is this necessary to say? In which category? I told you there's three categories. Okay, let's go with the bottom up. The bottom category, you're not supposed to appoint anyone. A retushim, you're not supposed to appoint. So you're definitely not getting a sharecropper because you're not supposed to be there. Okay? The first category, the shvuyim, where you heard that they died, of course he gets a sharecropper's amount. On the contrary, it's more than this. If you remember from the end of yesterday's daf, when you heard that the person died and you're appointed to run the crops, as long as he's gone, you actually get all of it, right? We said, remember yesterday, if the guy hears that he's coming back and he just decides to sell the entire field, because when he comes back, he gets a sharecropper's. Before he hears that he's back, he could just sell it and manage it himself because he heard the guy died and he's the relative. So from his perspective, he's the heir. So the halacha is that if he just like quickly sells it before the guy comes, that's a business head. That's fine. So I need to say that guy is not doing it for chesed. Meaning, the chiddush in his braisa is that this person who's managing the hostage's field, he's not doing this to be a baal chesed. He gets a cut. So I said, well, shavuyim, it's pasha he gets a cut. Bezin. So the point is, the first one, it's Poshit that he gets a cup. I don't need to say this. He gets the whole thing until the guy shows up. The bottom category, he's not supposed to be there. He gets nothing. The middle category, which is the Machlekes Rav and Shmuel, so it depends sort of who do you follow. Machlekes Rav and Shmuel is the Amaroyim, and the Tanoim, it's the Machlekes or Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, and the Rabbanon. So according to the Rabbanon, even in the middle category, you're not supposed to be there. You're definitely not getting sharecroppers. And the problem is, Rav Shimon Gamliel said, by the second category, it has the status of Shvuyim. So if the Shvuyim is Pashit, this is also Pashit. So like, well, basically, what is the chiddush? Which category is it necessary to say that they get a share of a sharecropper's cut of the field? So the Gemara says, ahai, which category out of the three that we just mentioned do you need to tell me that they get a share of the field? Ilema shvuyim, if it's the first category, shvuyim, we said, hashta zariz v'nisker have. We already got finished saying by a shvuyim that until the guy shows up, they could sell the entire field and keep 100% of the proceeds. My de'eshkach mi boy, do I really need to say that they get a sharecropper as if they show up? Of course not. It's poshit. They're not doing it for chesed. I know they're not doing it for chesed. You don't have to tell me that. So that category is removed. No longer needed for the chiddush. Take shvuyim out. Let's go to the bottom category. Retushim. Retushim, hamoitzi noisim yadei katani. We said retushim is not supposed to be there. We remove him from his post. So we definitely don't give him a share in it. So the third one's also removed. All we're left is the middle category of what we would say captive, but didn't hear that he died. We call it netushim. The middle category, netushim. It's a machloikis, tanoim. So this is a gemara, netushim. So the chiddush for netushim, but according to who? Laman, ilam l'rabbanon ha'mimaitzina isim yadeh. Can't be the rabbanon, because the rabbanon feel that netushim also, you do not appoint him. So they're also out. It must be Rav Shimon Gamliel. The problem is, Rav Shimon Gamliel said that that middle category has the status of the first category. The first category, we said, until the guy shows up, you actually get all of it. So you definitely get a sharecroppers once he shows up. So why is it necessary for Rav Shimon Gamliel to say it? Didn't Rav Shimon Gamliel say that the netushim are like shvuyim? And if by shvuyim it's a davar pashit, then netushim is also davar pashit. Why is it necessary? So the answer is kishvuyim. When Rav Shimon Gamliel said the middle category is like shvuyim, he didn't mean like shvuyim fully. It's like shvuyim, but it's not like shvuyim. Kishvuyim, but like kishvuyim. Kishvuyim de'ein maitzin es v'yadeh. The middle category is like shvuyim in that we allow there to be someone to manage the field, but it's not like shvuyim. Why? Because shvuyim, the first category, you completely can manage it and keep everything from the beginning until the guy shows up. Not so the second category. The second category, you only get sharecroppers. Says the Gemara, v'leikah shvuyim, d'ilohasim zaris v'nisker, v'ilohach ha'shaymin l'karis. So what it seems like, it's a shaylin l'rishonim, but what it seems like is that basically the halach is like this. In the first category, where you heard that the captive died, and that person manages the field, they get 100% of the proceeds until they show up. Once they show up, then it's sharecropper's amount. The second category, no. You manage the field, but you only get a sharecropper's amount. So what it means is, you keep a cheshbon, and you only keep 25%, and the rest, you put an escrow for when they show up. That's what it seems like. So Shaila exactly had to figure it out, how to do it, fine. Okay. What you see, though, over here is that when Bezdin appoints a relative to manage the field, they're not doing it to be Balei Chesed. They get a percentage of sharecropper's amount, whatever it is, they get a percentage. So the Gemara says, Maishan Mahadatan, how is this different than the following Mishnah? It's a Mishnah Ksubis, Hamaitzi Haitzaos Al Nichse Ishtoi. So a husband manages his wife's estate. So it's his wife's estate, she owns it, but he has the right to manage it. Let's say he spends a tremendous amount of money on it, and then they either get divorced or die. He doesn't get paid. He doesn't recoup. Whatever. You spent money, you spent money. That's life. You lost, you lost. Says the Gemara, if a husband spends a lot of money trying to manage his wife's field, whether he spent a lot and made a little, or kim of achal harbe, or spent a little and made a lot, you're not getting paid for this. Meaning, in other words, it's weird to compare the two, but the Gemara basically wants to know, why are we looking at this any different than managing a relative's estate? When a husband manages his wife's estate, he doesn't get paid for it. It's a risk, whatever. If you get, you get. You don't get, you don't get. Why over here do you get paid for this? Why do you get a percentage of it? And the difference is over there, I mean, the husband is getting a percentage of the fruit, but the Gemara wants to know what's the difference. So the Gemara says, well, you want to compare it to a wife, fine, let's keep going. Look at the next case. if you spend money on your wife, let's say your wife is under bas mitzvah, and you spend money on her estate, you know what the halacha is? You actually get recouped for that. Now you don't get, the halacha is basically, if I find out that your field is being damaged and I spend money to make your field better, I could actually demand payment for that. Again, the details of it are a little bit, not for now, but the concept, I could go into your field, spend money to improve your property, and actually get paid for this. That's the halacha. If you improve your daughter, if your wife is under bas mitzvah and you improve her estate, you could demand restitution for that. So now all of a sudden, right, we're talking about over here, you're being sent by Beis Din to manage your hostage relative's field. You get paid for that. So the Gemara says, how come you don't get, why is this different than a husband fixing his wife's field? He doesn't get paid for that. The answer is, well, he does if she's under bat mitzvah. So what's the svara behind it? Why is it that when she's above bas mitzvah, he doesn't get recouped for any of the money he put into the improvement? He could spend $100,000 improving her field. He gets nothing. But when she's under bas mitzvah, he could demand payment. What's the difference? It says the Gemara. Alma, kivan d'loy samcha daita, takina l'rabbanan. Ki hechi d'loy asadinu. Hachanam, takina l'rabbanan, ki hechi d'loy asadinu. What's the difference? The difference is that when your wife is under bas mitzvah, if you remember, especially if she's married off, assuming she's married off by, let's say, the brothers, she could end the marriage with Mian. So she could leave. Because he's not confident she's going to stay, he needs to be paid back so that he doesn't just torpedo the entire field. Meaning, when a husband, the average husband, when he's dealing with his wife when she's 25 years old, he knows that the only way out of this marriage is through him. Therefore, he's confident that if he puts money in, it'll stay. So he's motivated to invest. But when the girl's under bas mitzvah, she could end the marriage through Mian. So in his mind, he's thinking, why should I improve her field? She's going to leave 2 minutes. So Chazal wanted to sort of incentivize him to protect him a little bit because he doesn't know whether he's actually going to recoup any of this. You could demand payment. And that'll make him feel more confident and he'll put the money in. So too it is in our case. We asked the question, why is it that when you're managing your relative's hostage's estate, you get paid? Well, I don't understand. The answer is because he might show up. If you don't pay the guy, basically, in other words, you see from this that for someone to put in a lot of work, they need incentives. That's it. The same way if a husband is working with a wife under bas mitzvah, he needs an incentive because she might just leave. That he needs that incentive. So too, when you're managing a relative who's a hostage's estate, he might, Bez Hashem, show up the next minute, and then you lost everything. So you need an incentive in order to manage it properly. So the incentive is the sharecropper's value. It's very simple. It's incentive-based. That's it. The Gemara continues, the kulan shem l'karis. All of these situations, we treat them like an aris. All the hostage situations, we treat the family member who manages the field like a sharecropper. What's the kulan adding? The kulan means like there's another case. What's the other case? We touched on shavuyim, netushim, retushim. What's the fourth case that the Bryce is alluding to? V'kulan lasuyeh mai, says the Gemara, lasuyeh adam Rav Nachman Rav Shmuel. It's to include the case of Rav Nachman Rav Shmuel. Rav Nachman Rav Shmuel says, shavoy shenishba. If a captive was taken captive, mayridin karu v'nechasav, we point a relative to manage his estate. Okay, that we've had that. Yatzel adas, if he left and abandoned his estate voluntarily, ain mayridin karu v'nechasav. Okay, because he left. Rav Nachman today Yomar Bayreach Arukeshavi. Rav Nachman says a fugitive is like a captive. Meaning, what if someone, we haven't talked about this yet, what if someone is running away from town? Because he's a fugitive. So do we manage his estate? We haven't talked about that. We've talked about kidnapping, we've talked about hostages, we've talked about lost at sea. What if the guy, and we've talked about the guy just leaving because he just wants to party. This is a fugitive. It's a very specific case. He doesn't want to leave, but he has to leave. And he's running away. Says Rav Nachman, he also is treated as captive, meaning if there's a fugitive, we manage his estate. That's what it meant with Kulan. Now the Gemara wants to know, why is he running? He's a fugitive. Why is he running? Why is he fleeing? If he's fleeing because he didn't pay his tax, Hainu Ladas. The Gemara feels, that if someone is running because of taxes, his mind is pretty clear. That's not like, grab your bags and run. That was like, I'm making a conscious decision. Because it's not like your life's in danger. That's like, you have taxes, you're just like, listen, you know, you tell your wife, this tax every year, I'm out, and we're running. The Gemara doesn't feel that that's really a fugitive. That doesn't feel like someone that we should manage your estate. Like, we manage your estate when you're taken hostage because, like, you didn't see this coming, whatever. Listen, if a guy just decides, I'm moving to Florida, and doesn't point anyone to manage his field, you think we manage his field? No, because that's on you. You should have arranged it. If you're running because of taxes, yeah? No, we're still going to manage his estate, even if he's running. He's not a good guy for running, but we're still going to, like, whatever. The Gemara feels that it's more basically, like, how hastily did you have to run? Again, if a guy has a field and he just decides, I'm moving to Florida, I don't care about my field, you think we're going to manage his field for him? No, you don't care, we don't care. So the Gemara says, if you're running because of taxes, that's not, your life's not in danger, it's just you don't want to face the tax man. Okay, so I should have to manage your field because you don't want to pay taxes? That doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says, no, elabereach machas mardin, the case is you're running away because you're facing execution. You killed somebody. It's interesting. I mean, the case is that you killed somebody and you're running away from execution, and we still manage your field. That's a chiddush, because I could look at it as, first of all, he's got bigger fish to fry, but also, like, why? That's not my problem. You should have thought of that before he killed somebody. Kamash Malon, we will still manage, we will ask a relative to manage your field. It's a big chiddush, I don't know. It's a big chiddush. I'll check up Lee Nether for why'd he kill him, and was it self-defense? All these things, I'll try to check it out.
And does the guy get compensated?
The basin is not appointed.
I guess so, yeah.
If the basin is not appointed to approach, to watch the field, what happens to the field? Just goes fallow?
For sure.
And then, but it's still...
What happens to any person if someone abandons town?
I mean, but he's still...
It becomes a shanty town.
You can't just squat there.
True. Can't squat, but I mean, that's just what happens. I'm not gonna.
Why do we compensate if the spar behind compensation is incentive? The guy's not coming back.
He might come back. What if
I killed?
Nah, but you know, back then, I don't know, the laws changed all of a sudden. The Caesar died. Now it's allowed. I don't know. Point is, he might show up. I don't know. He might show up in the Bobby Valentine fake mustache type of thing. I don't know. Whatever. He might show up. Who knows? The point, I have to check up exactly. It's a very interesting spar. Now, the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shavu Shenishba. If someone was taken captive, v'niach kam elixir. Yeah, this is sort of the question. At what point do we ask the guy to manage? So the Gemara says like this. If he left standing grain that needed to be reaped, anavim livtzer, grapes that needed to be plucked, harvested, tamarim ligdar, zeisim limsak, they needed to be harvested, then bezdin yarin l'chasim, I mean apotropos. What actually happens first is bezdin will actually, for the captive, before they appoint a relative, because the relative is going to get compensation, Bezdin will actually first appoint a court-appointed trustee who will do it for free. That was part of his salary from Bezdin. He will actually do it for free to what? He'll actually harvest it. He will cut it from the ground. That's what he'll do. And then they'll appoint a relative to improve the land, to do all the other stuff. But the actual harvesting of the standing grain, meaning the relative is going to plant the new grain, water, fertilize, all that stuff. But the actual, if there is ready grain that needs to be cut, Bezdin will actually appoint a trustee who will do it for free. So the Gemara has the obvious question, which is, if you have a Bezdin trustee who's willing to do it for free, let him do everything for free. So the Gemara says, like, save the guy, save the hostage, even the sharecropper's percentage. Let him also manage the field. Says the Gemara, Velukim Apotropos Lailam, let Apotropos do everything. The answer is Apotropos L'dikani L'mukminan. We don't appoint Apotropos for adults. Meaning, in other words, the euphemism. What it means is, it's very hard to get an Apotropos to do this for free from Bezdin long term. Short term, much easier. You want him to just harvest. They have this in Israel sometimes, like, especially during the war, they needed people to just, like, pluck lemons, whatever it is. That's 2 weeks, in and out. It's a lot of work, but 2 weeks and then he's done. That Bezdin can find people to do. To just manage it, I'd be a skoyo, like, to just, now, it's too much. A relative can do this, but not Bezdin. Okay. Amar Rav Huna, very interesting halacha that's going to take us basically until the end of the daf. Ein mayridin katan l'nichse shavui. Three halachas. The first one is very obvious. We do not appoint, let's say the relative of the hostage is under bar mitzvah. We do not allow him to do it. Very simple. we don't trust him if he's under bar mitzvah to manage the field properly. It goes without saying. It's pretty posh. Ein maridin katan lenichse shavit. We do not appoint a relative that's under bar mitzvah to manage the hostage's field because he's under bar mitzvah. We don't trust him. Then the second halacha, v'loy karuv lenichse katan. We also don't appoint a relative to manage a child's field. V'loy karuv lenichse katan, meaning. Let's say the hostage is under bar mitzvah. They will not appoint a relative to do it. The Gemara is going to explain what they'll have to do is they'll have to find someone who's not related. Now, the reason for this is like this. Why do we generally appoint a relative? Well, we appoint a relative, first of all, they'll be interested in helping their family. Also, if the guy ends up dying, they'll be the heir apparent. So they're managing sort of, like they're looking at it sort of, they're managing their own fields a little bit easier. We do not do that when the guy's a katan. Why? Because we're afraid that he's going to claim it's his field. The katan is not going to be savvy enough to go into court and defend himself. Meaning, what if the katan shows up, the katan comes back, he's 11 years old, and he's like, that's my field. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Get out of here. Get out of here, kid. And he's not old enough to defend himself in court. So appointing a relative is actually detrimental to him because the relative might just claim that it's his. So we appoint someone else. Because if you appoint a relative, he could claim, no, it's not the kid's. It was actually belonged to his uncle, my father, and when he died, he left it to me. It's not his at all. And now the kid, and Katanim didn't generally go to court, right? Katanim can't be plaintiffs. So now the Katan is sort of messed up. So we actually don't appoint a relative to manage a Katan's field. Says the Gemara, v'likar of machmas kar of the nichse Katan. And we also don't appoint a relative of a relative of the katan. Meaning, let's say the katan has a relative Reuven, so we won't appoint him. We won't appoint Shimon, who's the relative of Reuven, because it's the same thing. He'll say, that's not the katan's, that's my cousin's. Meaning, the case is, let's say the katan has a brother, a paternal brother. We will not appoint him because he'll say, it's my field, not my brother's. Let's say that paternal brother, who we will not appoint, has a maternal brother from a different mother. A paternal brother. We also won't appoint him. Why? Because it's the same thing. He'll claim, that's not the katans, that's my brother's. And then it's too close. Basically, no relation to even a relative to appoint to manage. The Gemara explains, we don't have a katan manage a captive's field. That was the first halacha. The Gemara is very simply, he might ruin it. We don't trust him to manage a field when he's under bar mitzvah. Second halacha, that's referring to a maternal brother of his relative. So let's say the hostage has a brother, we won't appoint a brother, and that brother has a maternal brother, we also won't appoint that. It's too close. He'll claim that it's not the katans, it's my brother's, and it's just going to mess him up. So the Gemara says, the Gemara continues, because the child does not know how to protest a false claim, meaning the kid's not going to know how to defend himself in court. We're afraid that the relative is just going to take the field. And he'll say, this is my field. And it's going to be a dispute and the kid won't be able to defend himself. And therefore appointing a relative in such a situation will actually be detrimental to the katan. So the Gemara continues. Go to the next page. Very interesting. So we don't appoint a relative of the katan. Why? Because the relative will claim that it's his, messing up the katan. So who do we appoint? A rando. What do you see, though, from here? Why aren't you concerned like this? We have this, it's coming up in the news a lot. There is a concept in halacha, in Cheskes Habatim, called squatter's rights. Right? It's coming up a lot because I don't know what goes on over here. I think it's much more chaotic over here. Just people just like breaking into your home and just like claiming it their own. But there is such a concept called squatter's rights, which is that if a person stays in a field for 3 years, manages it for 3 years, with the owner knowing, and no objection, that's a proof that it's his, and even if he doesn't have documentation, that's fine.
But you need some sort of claim,
no? No. If you don't have documentation, but you're there for 3 years, and the guy sees you every day and doesn't stop you, that's, meaning, if he would have taken you to Beis Din, he would stop the proceedings. Like, over here, I think the problem in America is, like, they're calling the cops do anything. But, like, over here, it's like, for 3 years, he didn't say anything. Basically, it's the following premise. The premise is, generally, let's say your house. I go and I say, that's my house. So you say, no, it's not. Now, I ask you, show me the documents. Now, you probably have documentation of your home. But not everybody does. And we can't expect you to hold on to a shtar for 30 years. So the Gemara says, if you're there for 3 years working it every day and the owner sees you and no objection, the fact that you don't have documentation is not a raya that you're a squatter. It's mistama, it's yours. Mistama, he sold it to you. You just lost documentation because we can't mechayev you to hold on to it for so many years.
So in fact, though, that might be a chaslach sheish
b'tayna. Yeah, fun. Whatever, whatever. That's a legitimate chazaka. Here's the point, though. Does that work by a katan? If that works by a katan, meaning if you could squat in a katan's field for 3 years, then appointing a non-relative does nothing. You don't appoint a relative because the relative will claim that it's own and mess up the katan. So who do we appoint? A rando, a friend of the mensch, someone else. But if that guy can have squatter's rights, it's going to mess up the katan also. Because all he'll do is, he'll be there for 3 years because the kid's taken captive for 3 years. The kid will come back and be, that's mine. He's like, squatter's rights. And even if the katan, and the katan's going to say, I was there, I wasn't there. The cousin's not going to know how to defend himself. The cousin's not going to say, I was taken, I didn't know. So the point is, it must be, you see from here, the fact that you appoint someone else to avoid messing up the katan, Shema Mino, says the Gemara, you see from here, Ein machzik v'nichzei katan. Squatter's rights is not enough by a katan. Meaning, if you want to have squatter's rights by a katan, it has to be that you were there for 3 years when his father was alive. So that when the father died, you already had squatter's rights. But just squatting in a katan's field will not work. So in other words, by the way, if you buy a field from a katan, you better have documentation. Because if you're there for 3 years without documentation, it's not going to work. Because if it works, then appointing some rando won't help the katan either. Right there, it's going to mess the kid up. Okay. Now, the Gemara says, V'loy Amrun, Ella, this concept, V'loy Amrun, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, what's the V'loy Amrun? So Rashi says, V'loy Amrun, De'ein Mayridin Kar V'nichse Katan. This concept that we do not appoint a relative to the katan's field because the relative will claim his own is Ba'achi Da'aba. It's only regarding paternal brothers because paternal brothers' inheritance goes to the father's side. So we're not going to appoint a paternal brother because the paternal brother will claim that it's his. Avo Ba'achi Bi'ima. But what about a maternal brother? Right? We can't appoint a relative. We could appoint a rando. Now, relative like is different halachas. Like for Edus, like for signing like the Ksuba, relative includes a very large list of people. Over here, though, we're concerned that the guy is going to claim that the claim that it's his own. So says the Gemara, it's only a problem if it's a paternal brother. A maternal brother, it's fine. It doesn't go through the mother's side anyway, so what's the problem? By the way, there's a small percentage chance that there is a maternal brother can claim that it belonged to their mom and it was given to their father as nichse malug. There is a way, but it's 95% of inheritance goes to the dead. So the point is, if it's a maternal brother, it's fine, because he's not going to, how can he claim? What is he going to claim? Says the Gemara, va'achi da'aba nami lo yomrel baraita. And by the way, this whole problem is only for a field. Aval v'bati, regarding houses, less lenba. Meaning, let's say it's not regarding a field, it's managing a house, housing projects. That's fine. Why? Because for a house, there's enough edim. What's the concern? That he's going to start claiming that it's his and not the katan's? A field, it's very hard to find edus of who owns it because fields are outside, they're in the fields. A house, you'll be able to find edim. The guy's not, meaning you could appoint a paternal brother to manage the hostage katan's house because what's the claim? He's going to claim that it's his own? There's neighbors. The neighbors will say, I remember the hostage. He was there. So there's enough edim that it's not a problem. Says the Gemara, and even regarding a field, it's only a problem if there's no shtar. If there's a shtar, then it's fine because the shtar has a kol. The shtar will protect. So says the Gemara, there are many, many cases where it's allowed. But then the Gemara says, actually, scrap all this. Throw it all out. The Gemara says, loyhi, it's not true. Loy shenachi da'aba, loy shenachi da'ima. Doesn't matter whether it's maternal or paternal. It doesn't matter whether it's a house or whether it's a field. Doesn't matter whether it's a shtar or not. We don't do it. Why? Because every scenario, the kid can get messed up. Yes. Is inheritance through the maternal mother, brother? Generally not. Are there cases? Yes. Could he claim it? Conceptually, yes. It can mess up. Houses. Are there edim that people know who owns the house? Yes. But is it possible that there are no edim? Yes. So don't do it. In other words, don't do any of this. Okay. A very interesting story, very sad story, because you actually realize, you realize how sort of the world was not always We're sort of just sort of being exposed to how crazy the world was. The Gemara says the following story, a very sad story about a family, but it's clever of like, you have to like have a Gemara cup to sort of figure it out. The Gemara says like this, Hayi Safta, there was an older woman, Dehavla Tlas Banta, he had three daughters, she had three daughters. So you have, Sarah is the mom, and Bila, Rachelea Bila are the kids, okay? Three daughters. Ishtaba Ihi V'chadabarta. The mother and one of the daughters, so Sarah and Rachel, were taken captive. We don't know their fate. Remaining are two other daughters. That's the rest of the family. Shich V'chada, both were single. The one that were left over was single. One of the daughters died. V'shavki Yenuga, leaving a son under bar mitzvah. So in other words, you got the mom. Think of the tree. Mom, three daughters. One of the daughters died, leaving a grandson to the grandmother under bar mitzvah. And one of the daughters is captive with the mom. So all we know for sure is there's one sister that's healthy, fine. There's a grandson under bar mitzvah. That's all we know. And there's a grandmother and her daughter are captive. Now here's the situation. If the grandmother died, then that creates an inheritance that floods. One third goes to one sister, one third goes to the grandson. The remaining third would depend on whether the captive sister is alive. If she's alive in captivity, she gets it. If she's dead, then it's split 50-50. You understand? So it's right now, if the grandmother died in captivity, that created the inheritance, you know, funnel, and therefore it would go a third, a third, and if that captive daughter, if she's alive, she gets a third, and if she's dead, then it's 50-50. If she's still alive, then she gets everything. There is no inheritance. So here's the situation. Who do we appoint as being, who do we appoint to manage the field? Says the Gemara, Hechi Navid, so you have this older woman who's in captivity, someone's got to manage her property. We appoint a relative. Here's the problem. Lukme l'nichse b'yadadachte. So, very simple. Take the sister that's still alive, that's in captivity, the sister that's still alive in captivity, outside of captivity, the sister that's alive and healthy, let her manage the field. Here's the problem. Dilma shchiva savta. Here, it's a very clever, this is where you have to have a clever head. This field, field A, belongs to the grandmother. She's taken captive. We need someone to manage it. So we go to the next of kin. That's the daughter. We say, hey, manage your mom's field. Here's the problem. What if the mom died? Meaning, that field is now a third owned by the grandson. We just got finished saying we do not appoint relatives to manage kids under bar mitzvah's field. So you can't do it. So that's out. So you can't have the daughter. Because if she's dead, it partially belongs to the grandson. And we don't appoint relatives to manage a katan's field because they're going to claim it. So that's out. Then you'll say, so then, okay, have the kid do it. But we also don't appoint a katan to manage someone else's field. So now you're stuck. What do we do?
Is that solely the katan's field?
Yeah, but okay, fine. A third of it is. If the grandmother died, it's at least a third his field, a third to a half, depending on whether she's alive. No, but she could claim it. Why not? It's the exact same concern. Let's say they find out that the grandmother died, right? And the sister, the aunt, is now managing the field that's partially owned by the grandson, and she'll just claim it's hers. It's exactly the concern. We don't appoint a relative to manage a katan's field. This field might be the katan. That's the point. This field, we don't know who belongs to. If she's still alive, it's the grandmother's. If she died, it's a third his. Potentially, by the way, a third to a half. Moving scale, because if the other sister in captivity died, it went from a third to a half. We don't know who owns this field. So says the Gemara, Hechi Navid, what are we supposed to do? If you have the sister manage the field, the uncaptured sister, Dilma Shechiva Savta, maybe the grandmother died, and this field is a third owned by the grandson, the Ein Marid in Kar, L'nichse Kata. So say, okay, the only other one person alive is the kid. Have the kid manage it. We just got finished saying we don't have a kid manage because maybe the grandmother is alive, in which case it's the grandmother's and we don't have a child manage someone else's field. So what do you do? So says the Gemara, Amar Abaye. Hilkach, this is Alicia's point. Alicia's point is, let's say, worst case scenario, the grandmother died. How much of this field actually belongs to the kid? Not entirely. It's a third, moving scale to a half. So here's what you do. Palgi of Lachte. Half a field, let it be managed by the sister, because that's for sure fine. The major problem is half the field, at worst. The other half of the field that might belong to the grandson, Mukmino Apotropa Yanuka, that Bezdin will get an Apotropos. Okay. Rava disagrees. He says, Migu Demukmino Apotropa Lopalga, Migu Demukmino other Palga. Rava says, once you get an Apotropos to do half the field, then just do the whole field. Okay, so that's the clever answer. Now, the L'Soyf Shama Deshchivas after. Eventually they heard the grandmother died. So now the question is, who gets what? So now, here's the situation. The grandmother died. She's out. Now there's three daughters, but one daughter's dead and has a son in this place. So the son gets a third for sure. The uncaptured sister gets a third for sure. The question is that other third. If the sister in captivity is still alive, she gets that third. If she's dead, it's split 50-50. So there is a third that is unclear. So says the Gemara, Amar Abaya, Tilsi Avinu Achta. Abaya says, here's what we do. We give one third of the field to the sister. Tilsi Avinu Liyanuka, one third of the field we give to the son, because that's for sure. Vidich Tilsa, and that extra third, Yavina Dankal Achta, we split it. Half of the third goes to the sister. Vidich Danka Mekmina Lapachub Liyanuka. And the other half, we have to appoint an apotropos. Again, you can't give it to the kid because maybe this aunt is still alive in captivity and the kid can't manage it. You can't give it to the other aunt because maybe the aunt died and it belongs to the kid and we don't appoint a relative to do it. So that sixth, you give to an apotropos. Says the Gemara, Rava says the same thing. Rava says, once you get an apotropos for 1/6, get it for the other 6. Meaning 1/3 will be appointed by a trustee. Now the Gemara says the following story, and we'll end with this. The Gemara says, Amaisa, Mari bar Isik, Osa le acha mebechuzai. Okay, Mari bar Isik was apparently, I don't know who he was, but apparently Mari bar Isik was a very tough, it sounds like a gangster type, very wealthy gangster type. So Mari bar Isik had a guy who shows up and he says, I'm your long lost brother. Meaning, your father, when he would travel, had relations with a woman, I'm your brother. Okay? So, Amar Lei, Mari responds, Lo Yadanalach, I don't know who you are. Nope, don't know you, don't recognize you. So the Gemara says, Asa the Kabbadir of Chizda. So they ask Rav Chizda, what's. So the brother comes to Rav Chizda for a psak. So Amar Lei, Shabgrim. Rav Chizda says, the fact that he says he doesn't recognize you, like, to me, like, the first thought is that a lie? I don't recognize you. It's like, that's easy. The Gemara says, no, that's legitimate. He could legitimately not recognize you, even if you are his brother and he did meet you, he legitimately may not recognize that you're his brother. Meaning, Mari bar Isik might have known that he had a paternal brother out there somewhere. I mean, I don't think it's just, it's not like one of these like baseball players that becomes wealthy and now all of a sudden the relatives pop up. He might have legitimately known that he had a brother, but he's saying, I don't know, you're not the one, I don't recognize you. And the Gemara says it's very legitimate. Shenema, the famous pasuk, Vayakar Yosef Isachov, Vehemli Kiruha, Melam Shiyatza, Blechasim Mizakin, Babachasim Mizakin. The famous thing is that Yosef HaTzadik recognized them. They didn't recognize him. Why? Because he had a beard now. So he said to this brother, you might be the same kid that Mari saw when he was like 10, but now you're an adult, he may not recognize you. So we basically have a shayla of, is he the brother or not?
Is he a half-brother?
He would be a paternal brother. Yeah, but for inheritance purposes,
right.
Goes to the father.
This Mark Bar Isik is the guy who the new relative is coming to.
Yeah. Correct. He says, I'm your brother, and he was wealthy, and he feels that, and Mari Bar Isik might have just gotten a large inheritance. Probably that's what happened. The father died. He's managing a large estate, and he says, I'm your brother. I should get a percentage of it. So generally, what is the halacha? What happens when someone claims money from the other guy? What's the halacha? Hamayitzi mechavera olavaraya. So the Gemara says, Amar lei, zil aisi sa'adi duhuat. So bring edim that you're the brother. No. Amar lei, isli sa'adi. I have, so the brother says, I have edim about this, but they're all afraid of him. Because Mari Bar Isik was a gangster. They're afraid, they can't testify. Degavar alimu, he's very powerful. So Amar lei today, therefore the Rav Chizda told Mari, zil ant aisi sa'adi delavachua. So, Rav Chizda said to Mari, you actually have to bring Edom that he's not your brother. Meaning you have to bring Edom as the defendant. So he says, Amar Lei, Dina Hachi, Amaitzich Lavarai. What do you mean? Well, I, the defendant, have to bring Edom? He has to bring Edom that I owe him money. I have to bring Edom I don't owe him money. That's the defendant doesn't have to do that. It's the plaintiff that needs to. So he says, Amar Lei, Hachi Denilach. No, this is the halacha, L'chol Alim D'chavrich. For all people that are gangsters like you, meaning the halacha is that when you have someone who intimidates witnesses like you, the defendant actually has to bring witnesses. That's the halacha. Amar lei, saif saif, asis adle misadi. Mari said, yeah, but if you think I'm so tough, you can actually hear him as a gangster saying, so you want me to bring witnesses? What if those witnesses don't tell the truth? Meaning, you want me to bring witnesses because everyone's so scared of me. So these witnesses that I bring, how do you know they're not lying for me? So he says, I'm not worried about people lying under oath. I'm worried about you stopping someone from testifying under oath. But if you bring someone, I'm not concerned that they're going to be lying. So Lasaif, the end of the story is, and we'll end with this, the end of the story is that a guy actually brought Aiden that he is the brother. So, and they were not scared, they actually testified. So he definitely is the brother. But now he goes a little further. He says, not only do I want a percentage of the estate, I want a percentage of the improvements. Meaning, Mari Bar Isik got an estate from his father, inheritance with this, from his father. And he says, not only do I want a percentage of that, the stuff that you improved, the improvements you made, I want a percentage of that too. He said, well, what, that's me. And he says, no, because this estate was 50% mine, you're improving my estate. Then he says, and Amar Leir, because it said Shabrakam, it's a good taina. The Tanan is the Mishnah says, Haniach banim gedoylim ketanim, v'yishbichu gedoylim ezer chosim. If gedoylim and ketanim manage an estate, and the gedoylim manage the estate of the ketanim, hishbichu lemsa. The profit is split between the two. So he actually not only gets your original estate, he actually gets the improvements you put into it. So that was the taina. Now the Gemara says, just to end off with this, Amar Leir, Abaya says, me dummy. Hosam gedoylim gabi ketanim yodi, v'kom machli hocham yodi lecho. Gemara says, I don't think that's fair. Normally, when you have brothers that are above bar mitzvah and are managing an estate, they know the other brothers exist, and therefore they know that they're managing it potentially to benefit the whole family. Mari Bar Isik had no idea this guy existed. So he's not Michael. So maybe he wouldn't have improved it if he knew that 50% wasn't going to go to him. So I don't think that that's fair. We'll review that last point and we'll pick this up tomorrow.
You can't use DNA, right?